Hi, I'm Carl Salberto from FNR. Before you listen to this podcast, just want to tell you one thing. Our shows would not be possible without our great friends at DKP and Co Chartered Accountants. If you need an accountant, and everyone does, support DKP and Co. You know why? Because Dave Krunic and his team absolutely love football and they support FNR. Without them, we quite simply would not be here. Give them a call on 03 9023 9370. That's 03 9023 9370. Cheers, amigo. Hope you enjoy this podcast.
The Journos with Carlos Alberto Diego and Jonathan Howcroft from The Guardian Australia on FNR Football Nation Radio.
To a wonderful Wednesday. You're on FNR Football Nation Radio, Australia's first and only 24-hour radio station dedicated to the beautiful, beautiful game of football. My name's Carlos Alberto Diego, and this is the Journos Wednesday edition with Jonathan Howcroft from The Guardian Australia. Of course, you can join in the conversation anytime today, and with thanks to our great friends at Itel, you can win a premium-packed Itel Colomba along with Itel's new improved Greek Kouladakia, the Egg Twist Biscuit. All you need to do is be a best caller on any of our live shows today, and the number is 03 99 44 99 99 03 99 44 99 99. You can also join us and give us your thoughts and comments on SMS 04 28 933 45, and of course you can join the conversation on Twitter at FNR_radio. Good morning to you, Jonathan.
Good morning, Carlos.
I want to talk to you about the AAFC roadshow.
Yes,
I've seen it. But I don't know anything about their presentation. You went to one of them.
I did.
And you're going to educate me this morning all about it.
At 9 o'clock, I think you've got Tom Callas, haven't you?
So I'm going to be doubly educated.
And he will be in a much better position than I am to give you the nitty-gritty about it. What I want to communicate is just how impressed I was as an impartial observer to what they presented. Excuse me. What the atmosphere in the room was and how it all
sits. So who was in the room, by the way?
So who was in the room was, it would have been 40 to 50 representatives of Victorian NPL football clubs. And a lot of those former NSL representatives. And I guess the first thing that I was trying to gauge was, what was the atmosphere? You know, we've heard from different stages during this past year of the AFC existing that it's an NSL power grab. It's you're never going to keep all of the former warring factions together, and that couldn't have really been farther from the truth from what I experienced in the room. Just a sense of collegiality, a sense of common purpose, and a real sense of restraint from everybody, and. I commend the AAFC for the tone of what they presented and the measured way of how they went about stating their case. It wasn't what I walked away from thinking most of all was that this isn't a revolution. This isn't an opportunistic attempt to reinsert some old brands into the new environment. It was a group of people who recognized that the system that was designed well, that was designed with good intentions and from a bullet point presentation actually should work reasonably well, isn't. And this is their attempt to say, okay, this needs fixing. If you're not going to fix it for us, we'll fix it ourselves. And it everything stems from that position. The youth development was a core theme that ran through the night. The championship, which is this seen as the great banner position for the AAFC, actually didn't feel that significant in the...
So that's the second division?
Yeah, the second tier. Didn't feel that significant in the bigger picture, yet how it's presented to us so far, it feels like that's the be-all and end-all, the opportunity to allow NPL teams to compete on a and get into the A-League. that felt very much more just as somebody opening a door. Mm. So here's your ambition. Here's the reason to engage. Here's the reason to stretch yourselves. And if you think of the pyramid of Australian football being incredibly narrow at the pointy end and incredibly wide at the base, it's about broadening the point, if you like. And it didn't dominate much of the discussion. It was, okay, we want to work towards this objective. We know that there's a lot of work that has to go into it. We know that that there are issues with financing it. But let's not get handicapped by that. Let's not allow that to drive the debate. Let the debate be driven by what works in the NPL, what doesn't work in the NPL, and fixing those problems. And what became more apparent as the meeting went on was how a lot of the remedies for the issues in the NPL don't sit comfortably with any body responsible. So because of the state-based nature of how the competition's organised, there are variations within the operating models for each version of the NPL, which means that when the FFA Cup comes around, as one example, clubs in Queensland are operating on a different, are able to field different teams to clubs in Victoria, who are in turn fielding teams based on different regulations to those in the A-League. So the message was one of, okay, let's get everything in order, let's get it right, and figure out how that can be achieved. And it wasn't, it wasn't a sense of revolution. It was, okay, these are all the small points that need addressing. But because there's resistance from the states, because there's what feels like, ignorance feels too strong a word, but a lack of understanding from FFA actually about what the grassroots experience is like, that what might look, what the situation might look like on a spreadsheet or in a PowerPoint presentation is very different to the reality, that nobody's actually addressing these issues or finding the money to address these issues or placing them as a priority compared to everything else. So a group of people have said, fine, we'll do it ourselves.
Yeah.
And it's not a takeover. It's not a power grab. It's almost devolution. That if there isn't proper representation by the member federations at Congress, if FFA doesn't see this as a priority, then allow them to control their own destinies. The Congress seat, which is clearly a big ticket item, as well as the championship from a football public perspective, it's really just a means to an end, a mechanism to allow the NPL clubs the voice to accurately reflect the needs of grassroots football. And the way Rabbi Krayem and his board presented, it wasn't a sense of needing a seat at the table or some great breakthrough moment in football democracy. It was, we just want to get stuff done.
Yeah.
And this is how, this is the system within which we have to operate. And this is how we'll go about trying to achieve it.
I think the misunderstanding comes from the fact that for some reason, the FFA and people who make decisions at the top level of football in this country are still viewing the people who are operating at the next level as people who are running the ethnically based NSL clubs back in the 70s and 80s and 90s. And there was nothing wrong with that back then, but it wasn't full time. And the administrators of those clubs in those days were really hardworking migrant people who had built a club with their hands. And some of these people ended up running those clubs, but they were running businesses and it was part of their life, but not all their life. These days, these people running these clubs are very, very business-minded people, very smart people. I'm not saying the people back in the old NSL weren't smart. Of course they were smart. They were, but it was a hobby. It was a hobby that took over their life, but it was a hobby. Now, even the NPL 2 clubs, even a lot of the community clubs, a lot of junior clubs I deal with every morning. I speak to them. I've spoken to over 100 junior clubs in the last 4 months on this station. They get run almost like any professional club around the world. That's because of the knowledge now people have, because of the ability to get on the net and find out how clubs are run. People are really serious about joining, and there's some really smart people, influential people running junior clubs around Australia, let alone NPL clubs. Unfortunately, the perception is these people who are coming to the FFA and saying, we want a second division or we want whatever, they're still viewing those people as people who were volunteers running a club for a hobby, and so they got it all right. So they don't trust them. They can run a business like model with a club, but that they'll go broke if you give them all this garbage from decades ago. But they're only starting to talk to these people now, and I think having these people, giving them a voice, sitting down with them, they'll realise, hey, these people actually got something to offer, and you don't need to be one of the few in that closed league in the A League to drive. Policy in this country to drive the vision of this game. There's a lot of intellectual capital below that. And until we start as a sport understanding there's so much knowledge out there, so many clever people, we'll continue to have this thing about, oh, we can't do it because we can't trust that group of people because they'll make the game go broke.
Yeah.
Really, the game's gone broke, or teams have gone broke over the years because of bad FFA policy, putting teams in the wrong areas and for other reasons other than for the reason for that club to be there for 100 years, for World Cup bids, for political reasons. It's all because of the FFA, not because of the way people run clubs. So for me, it's time now that these people get voices and they get allowed into the conversation. It seems like they are, though. It seems like they are sitting. They had to beat the door down, but it seems like they are sitting with the FFA and they're discussing these things.
Yeah, and to continue what you were saying, their ability to lobby, in particular FIFA and the AFC, has shown that there is an appetite for their voices to be heard. Very quickly, the FFA position changed from the announcement of the championship or the latest stage of the championship development that David Gallop very quickly rejected to now having a formal working group with the member federations and the AFC that's co-branded between the FFA and the AFC. So there, it hasn't taken long for that message to get through. It just needs to be taken seriously to begin with, and people need to be persuaded and brought along the journey. And these roadshows have been I tip my hat to the AFC for, and Rabbi in particular, for flying around the country to get to all of these regional centres and actually talk to people about what they're doing. And just going back to what you were saying about everything that can't be done, one of the big takeaways from the AFC Roadshow is this is what can be done. We might not know exactly how yet. It will take time. It will take collaboration. But let's reframe everything from, instead of saying this is all that's wrong with the game, let's establish what's right and what can be better and where we want to get to, and we'll figure out how to do it. Because exactly as you said, there's all this untapped, there's a massive amount of untapped energy and goodwill. And I guess the question is how much capital, how much actual, how many dollars as well can be unlocked to actually start to figure out the costings for this.
But did you get a sense at all when you went to this roadshow that people were thinking, to hell with the money, let's go ahead? They were thinking
of
money.
No, not at all.
Okay,
no. Money was definitely a consideration.
Yeah, of course.
But it wasn't, we're going to do this regardless.
That's what I want the FFA... Carlos Alberto Diego is calling for the FFA to stop talking about how much these things are going to cost. Because when they say that, it's a message to the so-called ignorant out there that you're going to be irresponsible. They're not going to be irresponsible. They know how much this is going to cost. It's going to be a lot of planning, a lot of strategy around it. So stop talking about how much it's going to cost, because people understand that. and they're serious about this, and they don't want to go broke. And they love the game and they love their clubs. They're not going to make them go broke. So stop talking about the risk and the financial reality and all that sort of stuff, because people know that.
Yeah.
Start talking about, yes, we're going to do it and we're going to work together. And we all know the challenges, the financial challenges around it. And we can go forward from there.
Completely. And everybody cut their cloth accordingly at the point where, so everybody's working towards ballpark figures at the moment, but once we're much further down the line with the working group that's been formed, there will be a much clearer understanding of clubs' operating costs, basics like travel and salary expectations and so on. So all of that, this is part of this process, but what is so heartening is that we're working towards something rather than saying, okay, here's the pipe dream. Mm. What are all the drawbacks? It's okay, what are the steps that need to be taken to get there, so that when we get there, it's an appropriate model for how everything should work. And it wasn't a mudslinging exercise. Clearly there was disenchantment with FFA and some state federations, but it wasn't an old airing of grievances. It was, we thought that we were entering this NPL system with these expectations and working towards these goals. This hasn't been the reality. Mm. But the original objective wasn't that far off the mark. Mm. We just need to refer back to that to get to where we need to get to. And if that isn't going to happen under the existing model, then let's change the model. Mm. But retain that same that same expectation of what they're there to do. And the championship is the headline example, because if you don't have something like that driving the system, then you wonder what's the point in investing further capital in something that isn't going anywhere.
Mm. You mentioned a lot of the talk was around player development. Can you elaborate on what that was about?
Yeah, I mean, this would definitely be a good one for Tom after 9 o'clock. But just that sense that it's difficult to place where the NPL sits in the pyramid. So they're operating, and cost is the cost of player development is a factor in that. They're operating on the expectation that they should be the incubators of the best young talent in the country. Yet they get no transfer fees when that talent moves on. There's issues with the competitions, the comparative competitions that they're playing in. One of the ideas that took a bit of a diversion because it interested the crowd was the idea of a summer tournament, a summer youth tournament, which would actually become a bit of an income generator, that instead of clubs going overseas for pre-season tours and pre-season competitions and stuff, you'd actually create a product in Australia that would become an international standard.
So you're talking about NPL right now?
At youth level.
Yeah.
Just that sense of confusion among administrators about what their purpose is, and particularly with the advent of the A-League youth sides who are moving into that space with the academy systems and so on. So it was as much as anything, my takeaway was just a request for clarity about what they're there to do and how they should be measuring the success of what they do.
Mm. So what was the action points from the roadshow?
So there weren't really any action points as such. It was the continuation towards working towards a seat on the Congress or representation, whether that's immediate or further down the line, and the progression of the working group with FFA towards the championship. So at the moment, it's a watching brief, but you know, the event in itself was an opportunity to explain what's been happening over the past year, and for to invite feedback. There was at every step, it was, you know, tell us there. The board has an understanding because they are all involved at an NPL level, but they don't know everything, and they want to be told things that they should be representing.
You did mention before that they want to go ahead with this, and they're prepared to go ahead with it without the endorsement of the FFA. Can they do that though?
No, it's not that they're going to go ahead and do it without the FFA, but that. The NPL system is an FFA-administered competition. The creation of the AAFC is almost a reflection that that hasn't worked. So it's the creation of the AAFC and the move towards a lobbying position, a formal lobbying position and representation on Congress, which enables them to provide the levers to influence policy. So rather than just being 150 football clubs each with their own small voice, they're now very close to having a seat at the table that gives them official representation, and that then filtering down into the further decisions that happen. Obviously, if a championship emerges out of that, a second tier, then that would give them a significant more weight as well.
And more I talk about this, I've been so lucky in the last 4 months talking to people for many hours about this. My understanding of what's happened to the game since the advent of the A-League is so much clearer these days. Why the A-League does not attract the many millions of grassroots participants has become clear to me. The closed league, the no engagement with the NPL, the lack of resource or lack of marketing or lack of, the fact that they're marketing to the so-called mainstream. When, for me, the mainstream is the 3.1 million people actively involved. You go to any football club, any junior club this weekend and watch the kids running around and have a look at the demographics of those kids. That is mainstream Australia. Yet the FFA, over many, many years now, have this marketing strategy about attracting the so-called mainstream, and by that I'm thinking that it's AFL fans, NRL fans, it's non-traditional football people who don't have any affinity to the game at all, and that clearly has not worked because we're not filling stadiums with those people. If they do come for the odd game, they don't come back, right? But they're not marketing to our people, to the football people in Australia. So it just becomes, it's become clear to me with all those things why we aren't united, why the whole thing is not united.
Yeah, I agree entirely. And what's become clear to me in a much shorter space of time after, you know, being ignorant of it, is how important the vitality of clubs is. There are successful A-League clubs, Melbourne Victory being probably the standout over a long period of time, that have been able to evolve into clubs that carry the same emotional heft that some of the longer established clubs have around the world. But that's not the case across the board. And even that still is only based on just over 10 years of engagement. What the championship offers, if it gets up, and what a much greater, stronger relationship with the NPL and the system, the broader system as a whole offers, is that reattachment with what an actual proper club is about. That the understanding, the you know, what going to watch the youth teams, to regardless of whether the seniors are playing. Going to the club nights, knowing who's flipping the burgers, volunteering your time, even if your kid's not part of the system. These are, you know, this is what knits communities together. And you can define community however you want, whether it's ethnic, regional, age-based, gender-based, whatever. These are important parts of what keeps society operating. And all of that work is happening, yet we just see the tip of the iceberg, which is the 10 A-League teams, just nine in Australia, that seem to drift in and out of our field of vision depending on how successful they are, which is missing the point entirely about why football exists, why all sports exist to such a state of prominence. There's no God-given right that that we sit down and watch telly and see a football game come on, or have these great stadia that football happens to be played in. It's a reflection of all of that work that goes on behind the scenes. And the more we expose that and the more we allow that opportunity to enrich us, the better we become. And hopefully it feeds in to those A-League teams that already exist, that they take on some of that, some of those behaviours, and we're all nourished as a consequence. Because at the moment, exactly, I agree with you, exactly, there's such a dislocation between this shiny professional top tier and then the rest. It just doesn't make sense. It can't work.
No. And when I interviewed the head coach of the Gap Football Club in Queensland, you ever heard about the Gap? And they've got a really strong female program. There's 1,000 players at that club in Queensland, in the NPL. NPLW, NPL, 1,000 players. Can you imagine that? 1,000 people are going through the doors of that club every week, training nights on weekends for 6 months of the year. And Brisbane Roar are getting 9,000 people to their... I'm not saying they get all 1,000 players, but by the way, 1,000 players, then you multiply that out to families, friends. I mean, you'd probably have 3,000 or 4,000 people coming through that club every... There's clubs like that all over Australia.
Yeah.
All over Australia, full of volunteers, 100 coaches, that sort of thing. It's just a gold mine out there. But no one's connecting. And I don't believe, and having read Tom Callis's, and of course we'll be speaking to Tom very, very soon, article yesterday, the idea that an independent A-League is going to fix things too, that's just a little bit of a building block with the rest of it.
Yes.
Because if you're not going to be prepared to really build relationships or have a structure that embraces people like the NPLs of this world in a championship second division and have the idea of rewarding clubs for developing players through some sort of compensation or transfer fee, you don't do that, all those sort of things, you're not going to bring it all together.
No. Completely. The independent A-League argument, the key component for me is revenue generation. So everything that we've talked about, there is a dollar figure attached ultimately to it. And at the moment, we're roughly 100 million in, 100 million out. We need to grow that 100 million in to enable the game to spend on the areas that require spending. And It would appear that the independent A-League is the obvious way of the first lever that you would pull to start to address that. So I think that what's important in that is that there remain linkages, so that say they raise an extra, just pull a number out of the sky, say it's an extra $50 million a year, that how much of that then goes back into the rest of the system. The one argument is $1 is an improvement, therefore it served its purpose. One would hope that it fits as part of an integrated, a more rounded integrated approach that understands the value of the second tier and understands the value of aligning the game from the bottom to the top.
And the appropriate word there is understand. And I don't think the A-League clubs really do understand, but maybe I'm being a bit tough on them. They don't have the resource, and maybe they do understand, but they just can't do it right now in the current landscape. So I've got to be fair to them in that respect.
My take on the A-League clubs is that they are very, they are knocking down walls one at a time. So there's just such a single-minded focus to cross this first threshold, which is Congress reform and an independent A-League, that almost everything else is, it's detail. It's detail to them. They're the key issues. I think as soon as we see Congress reform start to take shape, we will see a lot more from the clubs about what we can expect from them further down the line. They've done a massive amount of work that they're not telling us about, that they're keeping to themselves for the time being. Once they start to put that out there, and I hope they do it sooner rather than later, because it needs scrutinising, it needs challenging. They need to justify what they're doing. There's an assumption, partly because the FFA themselves have said that there needs to be an adjustment to the A-League operating model. So we all know that there is change afoot, and that change has been widely acknowledged to be beneficial, but it still needs to be to be scrutinised. So the sooner that happens, the better. And again, you know, at that point, this is why things like the AFCC on Congress is important. They then have an official voice to challenge those plans, to make sure that there's something in there that works for them.
Well, I challenge the A-League to impress me, the A-League clubs. I want to see the plans. I want you to impress me. And I want you to impress Jonathan, because if you do that, you're going a long way, because I've been newly educated, I've got to say. With the advent of the A-League, I welcome that. The NSL, I was one of those people who said it should be blown up because of the financial mess it was in, and the fact it just didn't hit any of those sort of imperatives that you need for a vibrant league. But I love the NSL. But I was one of those people, I accepted the old soccer in new football campaign. And I don't remember too many people not accepting it at the time, except for the hard-nosed NSL club fans who just would not gravitate to the A-League because of the affront that they experienced because of the marketing campaign. I didn't understand that at the time, but I abundantly understand that right now. And it's taken me a while, but I really do understand. It's all about just talking to the people and understanding where they're coming from, and they're right. And you said it before, the A-League was introduced with great intentions, and a lot of us agreed with it. But these days, I think the model has led to the fracture between the different segments of our market, which would never come together under this current model. So I'm looking forward to this next stage, mate. Let's take a break, and when we come back, I know we're going to talk about the Asian Champions League fan engagement stuff, but I want to ask you something that I read last night: Boz's seven top ideas for where the game should go. But I want to talk about one in particular, whether we should revert back to a winter season for the A-League and move away from the summer. That's something he brought up, and I'm not quite sure what I'm thinking. So I'd love to get your thoughts about that. This is The Journos with Jonathan Howcroft from The Guardian Australia and also Carlos Alberto Diego here on FNR Football Nation Radio. More after the break.
The Journos with Carlos Alberto Diego and Jonathan Howcroft from The Guardian Australia on FNR Football Nation Radio.
24/7, you're on FNR Football Nation Radio, broadcasting across Australia and across the world. This is The Journos with Jonathan Howcroft from The Guardian Australia. Of course, it's a Wednesday edition. Those people out there who are wanting the final scores of the UEFA Champions League.
Don't tell them.
Jonathan's walking out right now. Let's go to probably the most important game first. Roma 1, Shakhtar Donetsk 0. Of course, Zeko scoring in the 52nd minute there, and they've got through now. And of course, Manchester United against Sevilla, really, it looked comfortable for Man U there for a while, but they lost 2-1. Ben Yedder scoring for Sevilla in the 74th and 78th minute. The reply there was from Lukaku in the 84th minute. And they're out of the competition, Jonathan. I'll let you vent for a second. Jonathan, what do you think about Jose Mourinho and how he's going to respond? I haven't seen the post-match press conference. I don't even know if he's even turned up to it.
Yeah, he'll be ropeable.
That's a disaster for Manchester United, isn't it?
It's not a disaster as such.
No. That result was a disaster.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. But from a bigger picture, you look at where they've come over the last two or three years. This is probably about par. But once you see Sevilla compared to the other teams that they could have got in the draw, and then going away and getting 0-0, which clearly wasn't, has proven not to be a great result. But the big frustration for United fans around the world is Mourinho ball means results are everything, because you're not going to get any entertainment for the 90 minutes despite the players at his disposal. So the Liverpool game on the weekend, everybody's delirious that United beat Liverpool, because beating Liverpool at anything is very significant regardless of how it's achieved. But that 2-1 result, say that's 2-2 or Van Dijk's header goes in early in the first half, and the whole terms of the game are different, you're getting very little out of it. So you have to get the results. And again, Sevilla over two legs, they just didn't try to win the first leg, and they were so moribund in the second that you come away from it thinking, well, is this trade off worth it? So it will be fascinating to see the reaction from Mourinho and from the United hierarchy about what their expectations are, in particular in the off season. What will the recruitment look like? What will the message be about what fans can expect? Because if you're not getting the results play Mourinho's way, there's not a lot else to get involved with.
Well, those Man United fans, if you're not excited about your team's performance today, you can get excited about this. You can now become one of us. That's right, you can become a huge, as part of the huge voice of football in Australia by becoming an FNR member today. If you love this game and love FNR's uncompromised and passionate whole-of-game coverage, you can become a member of FNR by going to footballnationradio.com and just clicking on the Become a Member link. You can be the voice of football and become an FNR member today. Now, Jonathan, as I said before the break, I want to ask you a question, I want to ask for your opinion about Boz's, I'm not sure what point it came in his seven-point plan to fix Australian football, but the idea of reverting back to a winter competition for the A-League.
Yeah. So
what are your thoughts about that?
I've not put a lot of thought into this prior to coming on air, so maybe we should work this out as we go along. So the rationale to begin with was that there's clearer air in the summer, which is now possible to argue has disappeared because of the encroachment of, in particular, the Big Bash League and the AFLW. What else are we looking at?
Just cricket in general.
Cricket in general. And then you have the addition of it's just not fun to play or watch football in 30-odd degree heat. So then the other argument, the argument against would be that rugby league, rugby union and the AFL means that the winter environment would be so congested that you wouldn't get any airtime and you wouldn't get access to the grounds. I presume all the grounds would be poorer. Do you know, I feel like it would need a conversation with the primary broadcaster, which in this case would be Fox Sports, wouldn't it? It feels like it would almost be a Fox Sports decision.
And they wouldn't want to cram the winter with another sport and take it away from summer where they're probably needing content.
So that would be the question. Do they need the content in the summer as enough to and I don't know the answer to that. How valuable is the summer content that the A-League provides? And again, this is part of the frustration with the Channel 10 deal, isn't it? That there isn't any independent editorial around the game that they pipe in from Fox. So it's not as if there's any that football appears anywhere else in the schedule. So if, you know, at some point down the track, you would hope that there would be more investment in independent editorial from whoever has that free-to-air component, which would factor into this decision. So my answer is disappointingly vague, that I don't know. My instinct is that it should be in the winter, so that it's aligned with the global calendar as closely as possible, and that it's just it's the natural time of year to play football. But I guess because we're now in this situation where the existing, the status quo is in the summer, you'd have to provide such a convincing reason to change rather than, you know, if you're just going to start from scratch, it might be a pretty even decision, which could go either way. Because the status quo is the summer, you'd have to provide such a compelling reason. And I think for me, it would have to be a financially driven one, which presumably would come from the broadcaster.
Yeah, and I don't know. Like, I'm like you. I wouldn't know what Fox Sports' reaction to that would be. I suppose they would have told Mark Bosnich one way or another whether they're happy or not happy with what he said. But I think the media exposure part of it was a big part of going to the summer,
sure.
Avoiding the AFL, avoiding the NRL, and clearly hasn't worked. We both worked for a radio station that promised 24-hour sport, promised, you know, the coverage during the summer of more football. And, they would broadcast games up until a point, until the AFLW came along or until the Big Bash or until the early season of the AFL was being played, the preseason games. And then suddenly going into a final series, they wouldn't have any more broadcasts.
Yeah.
So... And I'm not. That's no comment on that radio station. That's just a comment of the landscape at the time. What
Correct.
Was more important is by way of priorities for
Correct.
People.
Yeah.
And so we weren't getting it anyway. I'm not sure whether we got any more column inches in papers. Do you think you get any more column inches across the board, across all the papers over summer because we've moved to summer? I mean, the fact that you've got to think about it, I think that's enough to say that we don't.
Yeah.
We haven't.
No, I
free-to-air TV didn't jump all over us because we were in summer. So I think we've covered off the three major platforms there and we didn't get any joy out of that. So if that was one of the primary reasons, well, that hasn't worked.
No, it hasn't. It hasn't. But like I say, if you began with what are your two options, winter or summer, right now... then we could have that conversation. But I think what we're now looking for is there a compelling reason to shift back? So this is situation normal. Prove to me that a move back to winter is beneficial, not that it's about the same because of the upheaval required for everybody involved. You need to prove that there is benefits and that you can put a dollar sign to those benefits. I'm not sure how that would work. I mean, it's funny the when people talk about winter and weather being an obvious, you know, that crowds drop off when it's raining or when it's cold or whatever. I never understand that. I just always preferred going to, maybe it's just because of where I grew up.
Yeah, I don't
going to football.
I don't
in the
enjoy
rain.
Going football in the blazing hot sun, and I certainly don't enjoy going to watch WWE games when they're at 3 o'clock.
Yeah,
you know, I can tolerate the senior game, the men's games at 7, but 3 o'clock, and I don't know how the girls play at that time.
Yeah,
it's just impossible. But
just going back to where this conversation sits in the bigger picture. It's hamstrung because we're on our own grounds. It's hamstrung because of the reliance on the single broadcaster and that negotiation. It's hamstrung because of football's status relative to its other sporting challenges. And the example that you outlined about Victorian radio, it's part of the AFL's modus operandi to block out rival competitions. So it wasn't a case of an editorial decision saying this preseason AFL friendly is more important than an A-League final. This is the contract.
You have to
show our sport above all else. And it needs soccer to get the same heft and the same ability to influence its commercial partners, which clearly at the moment it doesn't. If in 25 years' time we've got 10 boutique stadiums around the country, a healthy broadcast partner and a series of commercial relationships that give them the flexibility, I'd love it to go back to winter and for it to be a flag in the ground moment, you know, that this is where our game belongs, and these are all the ways that it should be operating. But we're not anywhere near that point.
Yeah, but it'll be interesting to see if we get the mechanics in order. You know, if we get the foundation and the mechanics around it, all the elements in the right place, and people get behind it, it may not be that long. It may not take that long to get it right. And it's the game's never been united. But we've gone from an amateur volunteer sport for many, many decades, from post-World War II to about the 90s. And then we started talking about, late 90s, we started talking about professional teams like Northern Spirit, Carlton Soccer Club and South Melbourne and so forth. And so we've tinkered with professionalism up until the start of the A-League. And so there's been different phases of the game, and so different attitudes around that. So our next stage is fully professional. We're an industry. Let's all come together, top to bottom. And I wonder how quickly that can happen. Can happen. It may not be 25 years. It might be 10 years. It might be 6 years. And we might say, might have some really big wins early that might just drag the momentum forward. So, but just on that, mate, we won't have a lot of time to talk about Asian Champions League, but I want to talk about fan engagement really quickly.
Sure.
The idea of legal pyrotechnics.
Yes.
What do you think about that idea?
It's a fantastic idea. Yeah. And what stands out about it is just how straightforward. Why aren't conversations like this commonplace? Hmm. Why it's such a good news story for FFA, a quick win to show that they're taking an interest, and even if nothing comes of it, just showing the goodwill is a benefit to FFA. So I think you could bring out 50 examples that are similar to this. I just think it's a great idea, and more of them exposed, please, even if they don't necessarily come to fruition. I think the thing that we talk about quite a lot is that people go to watch football for different reasons. Part of it is the active fan participation, and it deserves special treatment. It can't be allowed to run riot, pun I guess intended, but it has to be given special treatment. It has to be treated in a certain way, and it's difficult because an element of what's exciting about it is it's anarchic. It is a means to vent. It is a means to behave contrary to social norms outside of a football stadium, but it still has to exist within acceptable parameters. And pyrotechnics are part of football around the world, so it's inevitable that they will become part of football in Australia because of the immovable line that lighting a flare out outside of a boat in distress is criminal. You then have to figure out, okay, if we know that that influence is coming on, but we know that this is where the hard line is, can we work together to find a middle ground? And that looks like what's happening. So more of it. But while that's happening, we've still got the banning procedure for Western Sydney fans in Spotless Stadium, which comes back to that argument that we were talking about before, about owning grounds, having better relationships with state governments and the federal government, employing our own security staff who understand football and the behaviour of football crowds. So it's kind of, give with one, take with the other.
Absolutely. And one thing I did like about Greg O'Rourke's that media release that came out, he was quoted saying that they've got a lot of work to do to support the fans again, or to bridge that gap between the fans and the FFA. And the recognition is fantastic. I applaud him for saying that. The honesty around that was terrific.
And again, come back to Pablo Bates and Football Supporters Australia. This is why you want an official voice, or a voice that has a mechanism to influence authority that represents supporters. because they're such an important constituency that aren't otherwise represented. So that's again, part of why this Congress situation is so important.
Mm. And just really, really quickly, mate, the actual smoke devices, I've seen videos of how they're used in Norway and I think in the MLS, and they look great.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not going to hurt anyone.
Yeah.
There's no apparently there's no heat emitted from them. It's just smoke.
And the unique... The what makes football unique in Australia is what happens in the stands. So that needs cultivating. Mm. And if it can be cultivated in partnership with FFA, well, it's a win-win.
Mm. Great talking to you again, mate. I really enjoyed our chat today, and I look forward to speaking to you again next Wednesday. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Carlos.
That's Jonathan Howcroft from The Guardian Australia on the Journo's Wednesday edition. That brings an end, by the way, to the Journo's for today. You can podcast the shows on iTunes and SoundCloud. So until this time tomorrow, may you have a fantastic day in football.
The Journo's on FNR, Football Nation Radio.